Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's now 3 days after the world changed in Egypt. Protests have taken place since in at least Algeria, Yemen, and Iran. The Palestinian Authority announced presidential as well as local elections. Later in the show, we'll talk to David Sanger from the New York Times on his fascinating front page article today about pro-democracy activists in Tunisia and Egypt actually coordinating their movements. Right now, we'll get the thoughts of Ambassador Thomas Pickering, who was a U.S. diplomat under Presidents Ford, Carter, Reagan, Clinton, and the first President Bush, including ambassador to Israel for President Reagan and to Jordan for Carter and Ford. These days, he is a trustee of the National Committee on American Foreign Policy. Ambassador Pickering, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Do you see the movement spreading in a meaningful way beyond Egypt and Tunisia now?
I think it's too early to tell. There's certainly very clear indications that some would like to see it spread. It certainly moved to Jordan and Yemen very rapidly. It's been in Sudan. It's been in Algeria. It's been in a number of other places you mentioned this morning. I think there are two things to think about here. In one area of the Middle East, certainly the wealthy countries of the Gulf, there will certainly be efforts, and we've already seen them, to reward the population in a way, obviously, to try to avoid protester power. In other parts of the Middle East, Algeria and Syria in particular, I think there will be an extreme deployment of force on the streets with perhaps a willingness to shoot. And in that sense, they will use military force. So it's the countries in between that more or less show their vulnerability. A number of those, including Jordan, and I think to some extent now with the Palestinians, are moving to try to introduce reforms, reforms domestically in particular, to deal with issues like pay and jobs and so on.
And what about Jordan, where you were a U.S. ambassador? It's friendly to the U.S. and Israel. You just mentioned some possible reforms that they might make. But, you know, we see their king and queen as nicely westernized, and yet it's not a democracy. Do you think the movement is not about democracy in Jordan as long as people get their economies taken care of?
No, I think it's also about democracy. Jordan has had a parliament. There have been concerns that the parliament hasn't been as representative as it should be, that the elections haven't been conducted with a degree of scrupulousness and fairness that we would think would meet Western standards. Those are areas for reform, obviously, and they'll make a difference. And my sense is that the Jordanians have to consider the wide range of activities, everything from their education system, which they have shown remarkable ability to begin reforms. They every child has access to a computer program in Jordan in their educational system and other areas. But they have a number of educated people who can't find jobs. They have a very strong Palestinian presence, probably 50% or more of the population, who are obviously nervous and concerned. They're still guests in the country, although compared to other Arab countries, they have been treated well. So Jordan is a particular case, and it has obviously now a problem of facing particular difficulties. My sense is the king moved early to dismiss his government, bring in a new cabinet, and obviously to open the door to reforms. What they'll be able to do and how rapidly will, I think, signify the degree to which, in fact, they are moving in response to what their public feels.
And you got to love Iran's position. They publicly supported the movement in Egypt, but have condemned a demonstration planned for today in Tehran. Your thoughts about the ramifications for Iran?
Well, the ramifications for Iran are all very much looked at through the prism of the reaction to the June 12th failed elections in 2009 in Iran and the large movement that took the streets and stayed in the streets and obviously created serious problems for Iran. And I think the Iranian leadership doesn't want that to happen again. And so it's quite obvious that while they can cheer other people having these kinds of questions, they are not prepared to permit them to intrude in Iran.
Is this the end of the U.S. propping up dictators because they support our foreign policy interests or sell us oil?
That's obviously a huge problem for American foreign policy. We have, at one and the same time, a strong realist tradition in our country and a strong idealist tradition It was very clear throughout the Egyptian problem. We were trying to balance those in ways that over a period of time led us, obviously, to see the street protesters and our idealism as the primary effort that we should be making in Egypt. I think that that will continue to be a question for American foreign policy. It will not, in one way or another, radically change America's views. America will not, I think, go in to an active effort to change governments all around the world because they don't represent the highest form of democracy. To some extent, that's intervention. To some extent, we all know democracy works best when it comes from the country itself, out of its own traditions, out of its own people, and out of its own leadership. Egypt, I think, has demonstrated that, not that a foreign country can make those kinds of things happen, and we ought to be very careful about that.
Former Ambassador Thomas Pickering, my guest on WNYC. He has served both Democratic and Republican presidents, been ambassador to Israel under Reagan, ambassador to Jordan under Ford and Carter, and other posts. Has this been one of the fundamental paradoxes that you had to deal with in your diplomatic career, the idea of American exceptionalism, if you want to call it that, on the one hand, being uniquely for democracy, and the hypocrisy of not being for democracy time and time again when it suited our needs?
Of course it is, and it's a tremendous and difficult question for Americans to respond to. In many cases, we have taken the view that democracy should be our point of advocacy and that we should seek to persuade foreign governments to move it. And indeed, I think our country has been an example for decades of democracy. And in many ways, I think we can take quiet pride that we were a positive influence as a country in the long term on Egypt, even if in specific terms they've had serious objections about our previous relationships with their former regime. These are things that I believe add to the challenge and the difficulties of carrying forward a foreign policy. When we see things moving, we need to be in a position to support them. We should not take on the view that we can order all things in all countries at all times, either by force, which has proved its, I think, bankruptcy, if I can use that strong word, in Iraq and Afghanistan, or by pure persuasion, where in many cases we haven't been capable for 30 years of trying to persuade President Mubarak that he should move on those kinds of questions. We have other priorities as well that are hanging out there. We want stability in the Middle East. We want to support our friend and ally, Israel. The peace treaty process is very important. In many cases, you have to deal with the governments that are on the scene, not the governments you hope for, in working those questions out. So every American diplomat, ambassadors on down, deals with this particular question in a serious way, day in and day out.
On that point, I've noticed some pushback against President Obama from a number of perspectives. There were certainly people who were pushing back on him for not siding consistently and aggressively enough with the protesters. But from some Republican presidential hopefuls, there's been pushback the other way, that the president should have shown more support for our, quote, friend and ally, Hosni Mubarak. Let me play you a clip of Rick Santorum at the CPAC conference over the weekend.
I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't have sided with the protesters, but what message are we sending to countries around the world who are friends of ours that when things get tough, we walk away?
So what do you make of that? And you've served presidents of both parties, as we've mentioned. Is there do you think that there would, if someone like Santorum was elected president, would the U.S. be less inclined to support democracy?
I think not, and I think he himself said it. I think that he raises, once again, the controversy and the conundrum we're speaking about. It's very clear that the U.S. Today has sent Admiral Mullen and my old friend, Undersecretary of State Bill Burns, to the Middle East, certainly to Jordan, to assure the leadership in Jordan that, one, we want reforms. I'm sure they're saying that. But, two, obviously, we want to promote those in a condition of stability. We're not here to run around the world, as I said a moment ago, trying to do in our friends. We're trying to persuade them in what quiet way we can and diplomatically that the wave of the future may not be the kind of government they presently conduct, and maybe they should think about moving on the other side of change.
But does that mean
reforms
can
that will make a difference?
Can you think of an example where, if there is a pro-democracy movement that's real, that breaks out, whether it's in Jordan or anywhere else, that the U.S. would not support the protesters for the sake of stability or to not send signals to other quote-unquote friends who happen to be dictators that we won't abandon them?
Well, I think that we have not publicly gone out and said in Yemen or in Jordan or in Sudan or in Algeria, all of these street movements deserve 100% support. I think we've sent messages quietly to the governments that they should pay attention to these movements and deal with them effectively. But I think that the question of what view we have taken in public, as I've watched where we have come, has been one of much more careful balancing between the two aspects of our national interests.
Before you go, what do you see happening in Egypt itself? It is so precarious still. It's military rule so far, not democracy. I heard a report that the military is trying to ban labor strikes, which some unions are trying to mount as the next wave of protests. How do you assess the current moment?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is they've been trying to clear the square. There are reports that people are now moving back to the square, which is essentially the symbol of change. The second is that the military would like to bring about what they would call some stability and law and order in the present set of relationships. They have made promises about elections in 6 months or so. They've made promises about other reforms, including removing some of the really, really tremendously oppressive laws that they've got about arbitrary arrest and all the other kinds of things that that have taken place in Egypt. I think those will all be there. There will be, I think, for some time, a play back and forth between the military and the leaders of the street movement, who are only beginning to emerge now, about where, how, and when these changes will take place. And in the meantime, what kind of governance Egypt can expect in the immediate future to remove the vestiges of the Mubarak administration, if not immediately to introduce the kind of changes that will be necessary to see a fully elected democracy, which I think is everybody's objective. But we're over the dramatic part, but we may not be over the hard part yet. The hard part will be how to put all of these things in place in a society which is obviously very, very much alarmed, very fragile, very sensitive and very difficult and very distrustful, if I could put it this way, of the military in the one hand, and on the other hand, heavily reliant upon them over the last 18 or 19 days for their support in making these changes become possible.
How distrustful are you of the Egyptian military leaders with your experience in the region in terms of their sincerity about moving to what we would consider real democratic elections?
They have not grown up in that tradition, although many of them have been in the United States and have been influenced by that. I think they will continue to be influenced by their military colleagues in the United States, but there is a concern that the longer this goes on without basically a continuation of popular pressure, the more the military might be persuaded to say, gee, it's all over now. Maybe we should just go back to something like the old system. It was safer and we were better off. So that tendency will be there. It can't be eliminated. And what I see among the people in the street is the notion that we have to go back to Tahrir Square because that's our major pressure point. That's where the world watches. That's where Egyptians watch, and that's where we can have the most influence. So there will be this byplay that will go on. I would hope and expect that the pressures for change will continue. I think they're in the long-term future interest of Egypt, but they have to be done with care. They cannot be done recklessly, and they have to be done, obviously, in a way that meets the majority demands for the shift. And behind all of this, we have the Muslim Brotherhood.
So
I'm not frightened that they will become an immediate power on the Egyptian scene. They seem to be blending in very well with the protest movement at the moment. Over a period of time, if there is a vacuum, I would be surprised if they would not move to fill that leadership vacuum in one way or another, or that organizational vacuum. They will have a role in elections. Some people believe they may get as low as below 20%, but others are saying 40%. I don't have the least idea, and I suspect that's uncertain. But in the long run, they represent certainly more piety, more religion, and potentially more fundamentalism, and therefore their role and their position needs to be watched carefully, even if we don't see it as a major threat now.
Former U.S. Ambassador to Israel and Jordan and the United Nations and elsewhere for presidents Democratic and Republican, Thomas Pickering, currently a trustee of the National Committee on American Foreign Policy. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks. It was great to be with you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, happy Valentine, everybody. Valentine's Day. You're all. Brian Lehrer shows Valentine's. But we will have a call in about your online Valentine who you haven't ever met face-to-face. If you're in that situation, call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Stay with us.